my life is, I'm a dad now. For whatever that means, I couldn't define that for you, but I'm not here for me anymore, which in some ways really made me a better dad, but in other ways was like a crushing, how do I serve this person when I'm a selfish person myself? How do I really give this person everything they need?
My name is Tim Anderson. Welcome to Father and Friend, where men learn to live for the good of their families.
Today, we're with Ross. He's the father of four, has a beautiful wife. His children are on the older side, 15 and up. Two are out of the house, living their adult life. And he's got some great things to tell us about establishing consistent rhythms in your house, protecting your kids from technology, and spending intentional time together as a family. I hope you enjoy this conversation.
Yeah, but I didn't have any going into it. When we had our first one, you know, it was just kind of flying by the seat of your pants. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it was a, it was just a real, kind of looking back, we didn't have a, we were surrounded by, and I think this is where church makes a difference in some ways, or can make a difference. And this is for better or for worse. But the thing that, like there was a video series that was going around back then, and I can't remember what it was called, but it was just, it was a sort of a parenting infants kind of a video series. And then there was a book going around that was kind of, it wasn't related to that, but it's sort of the same school of thinking where, you know, you just had, you know, the kid is not the center of the universe. You don't want to raise your kid to think that they're the center of the universe. And so you need to kind of teach them to, you know, self-soothe, and which ended up a lot of times, you know, letting them cry for a long time. and, you know, we were, so we, but it was at least a framework. Mm-hmm. And again, I think we didn't have the wisdom to know how to apply the framework. So it's not that there aren't frameworks out there floating around from church to church or whatever, but a lot of times it's, you're just young, you don't know what's going on, and so it's like you just follow it slavishly. Mm-hmm. So that was, I think, what we did with our first. And but yeah, I think the first, I guess the big real impact for me was my daughter, when she was, you know, probably 3 months old, and I was getting real frustrated with her, and I just kind of stopped and realized, and I don't know what it was, but it was just, maybe it was God, maybe it was just, you know, this sense of like, your life has changed now. And like, your life is no longer your own. Mm. And I think that was a real kind of a template for me of just in parenting, you know, from day one, without having a bunch of examples. I mean, I had a good dad, but no, like, it was, like you said, it was just a, was very, it was just what I had experienced, and mm-hmm. no real, which is, that's how learning happens really. But it's like, my life's not my own. Mm. And that became sort of the very first thing. And like, my life is, I'm a dad now, you know, for whatever that means. I couldn't define that for you, but it's like, I'm not here for me anymore. Which in some ways really, you know, made me a better dad, but in other ways was like a crushing, like, oh my gosh, mm-hmm. I'm not here. Because then you're like, okay, how do I serve this person when I'm a selfish person myself? How mm-hmm. do I really give this person everything they need? And so it was sort of the beginning of, you know, just a long process of just growing as a dad, that one that I'm still in, mm. you know. But that was, I think, yeah, that absence of, even with the absence of a framework, you know, this is how you dad. And I've read, I guess, books here and there, or parts of books. I've never finished a book, I don't think, in my life. I read page 80 of several fatherhood books. And I'm like, oh yeah, I got this. So I got, you know, some advice, heard some sermons about it, you know, here and there. So the church, you know, does that as well. But again, it's not till you're in the trenches that you really realize who you are, you know, how selfish you are, how much this kid needs you, how dependent they are on you completely and utterly, and how, like, you just don't have what it takes to give them everything they need, but you need to figure out how to come up with it, you know, and how to do it. And so I think that was me as an early dad.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good. So you've got two in the household range of being at home, and then you've got two that have moved on into their adult life.
Mm-hmm.
It's great. And you've got a beautiful wife.
I do. Yeah. She's, we'll be married 25 years, you know, up till this year it'd be 25 years.
So, congratulations.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, she's amazing.
That's a milestone.
She celebrated her 50th birthday.
Wow.
And yeah, dude, she's what do they say? I outpunted my coverage. That's that's definitely what's happened. She is just amazing. So yeah.
That's awesome. So let's talk a little bit about your own upbringing, fatherhood-wise. Like, what did that look like for you? And, oh yes, another piece of information that's important. You were the founding pastor of a fantastic church in Denton.
Yeah.
And you're currently working in marketing.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah. I'm a content. I'm a writer for a. For a company, can I say, am I allowed to say what company I'm working
for? No point.
So I write now. I'm in marketing. Founded the church, 15 years ago, 16 years ago almost. Yeah. So did that for 13 years and then flamed out in a blaze of glory. And so stepped out of that. And now I went into marketing. And just, again, just content writing, a lot of web content, stuff like that. And we ended up back at the church that we started, and it's just been a great, great blessing to be there. So, yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
So let's talk about what did you know about fatherhood before you became a father? What was your picture, your mental image of fatherhood? What things did you appreciate about your dad? What things would you have changed?
Provider. My dad was a great provider for us. He was a very hard worker. Just took care of business. And my dad was spent lots of quality time with us. He was invested in us. You know, drove us to baseball games. This was back in the days when, like, there was only like a few select baseball teams, and we were on a team that just drove everywhere, and dad took us, and he was just a faithful dad, always in our lives. You know, I think he, as he kind of grew, as he was growing, you know, he had to figure out how to deal with the troubled kids that we were at times. And I think he struggled to deal with our kind of our crazy dispositions at times. But you know, I kind of looking back, you know, when I was 20, I was real judgmental of my dad, about all the ways that he didn't do it right. But now that I'm 47, you know, I'm very gracious toward him. You know, it's the dude that's just figuring it out, you know, and a good man, you know. So he was always very kind of helping us, you know, just really wanting us to kind of be who we were kind of made to be, you know. Didn't push anything on us, you know, let us figure a lot of stuff out. And so, yeah, and you know, he's a self-made man. He didn't have a great college education and got into sales and made a lot of money and did really well in that. And so I think he just sort of had that, you know, I'm going to give you the nuts and the bolts to survive and figure it out. And we're going to be friends. And, You know, but you're going to have to figure out your life, you know. Mm-hmm. I don't have a path for you to mm-hmm. go on, and which was great, mm-hmm. you know. It was hard. It was confusing mm-hmm. at times, but, you know, I think he did a good job with that, so, yeah.
Do you feel like you would have appreciated more sort of direction in that, or do you feel like his approach to releasing you into adulthood was good?
You know, it's hard to say because I don't know that I would have listened to it. And it's not, and maybe he tried, but you know, I mean, our family, some things happened, like our family divorced. They had a divorce whenever I was in ninth grade. And so I think whatever path he would have put me on, I think it was really difficult to kind of keep that going. But I was a baseball player, and so he was invested in that, and you know, but he never was like, you know, you're going to make it to the bigs, you know, make your family proud, son. And it was nothing like that. It was always, you know, you need to be ready, you need to be prepared, but you know, how to be ready, how to be prepared. A lot of the times it was, you know, I had to figure that out myself. And it's not that he didn't try, it's not that he didn't have things to say. He's always given great advice. But it was, you know, you got to go ask him, you know, kind of a thing. And there wasn't a, here's what you need to be doing. Here's what you need to be thinking. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I could have used that. But again, like, in the trenches of parenting, I don't know if you're not super, if you don't have a vision for fatherhood yourself, where that's a part of kind of what you're doing, and you haven't established that as a part of your family culture, then it's not going to happen. Mm-hmm. You know, it's going to, and I've even seen that with my kids where I've tried to impart all these lessons of fatherhood to them outside of like established rhythms where that would happen most naturally. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the result is like, you know, let me try to download all this or upload all this information to you over lunch, or, and it comes across as preachy, and then, you know, rolling your eyes.
Right, Dad, yeah.
Or it's like when Henry, before he went to college, he was like, we went to our favorite restaurant, New York Sub, one last time. We're going to drive him or fly up to New York. And he's like, Dad? And I'm like, oh, baby, here it comes. You know, here's the talk. And his voice is a lot lower than that. I made him sound like he was 9. But, Dad? Yeah. And I was like, yeah, son? He's like, I'm really sad. I'm really, you know, sad that I'm going to miss the last episode, you know, of season 2 of The Boys, which was the show. It was on Amazon. And I was like, oh, man, it's good talk, you know. But, you know, it's, and I guess I'm transitioning to me a little bit here, but, like, the trade-off there is that my son talks to me about that stuff, and, you know, we're friends.
You're relaxed, you know, about that. Yeah, yeah, he feels comfortable just saying, yeah, whatever he's doing.
Yeah, and we're, so, you know, there's a, I think that's something that'll be helpful, you know, going down the road, is just, as that I'm here as his kind of friend slash mentor slash coach slash, you know, whatever I need to be for him, and so, and for them, for all of them.
Now you mentioned advice that your dad gave you. Are there any pieces of advice that your dad gave you that have stuck with you?
No, my dad doesn't. If you ask him something, he doesn't give things in little bits of advice. It's always, you know, you'll get a sermon on conservative economics and but it's good, it gets very well reasoned, and it's not like it's not a lecture, but you know, he's just got a great mind, so you just really learn by absorbing things from him through conversation. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it doesn't have like, you know, 6 one way is half dozen the other, son,
right?
That's
like
not an advice, but
cute,
that's a
cute
saying.
Terms or something.
Yeah, it just doesn't have any pithy aphorisms, you know, to share. But so, yeah, I think,
was there anything he taught you in those? Cause you said he wouldn't really come to me and give me a path, but if I went to him and asked him, he would tell me what he thought about something.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is there a conversation that you remember from those days? That...
From the family days?
Yeah.
From, like, before leaving?
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of that... I'm trying to think. One of the things I remember most vividly was him and my mom were going through a divorce, and he would come home from work, and like almost every night, this was for like, I don't know how long it was. It seemed like it was like the whole kind of whole of my high school career. He would cook like something special for me. And so I think that community, so he was always wanting to be around. And there was tension in the house. Don't get me wrong. Like I was a really struggling teenage kid. It's always stood out to me was just how he would make Eckrich sausage for me on the grill. Like, you know, and he would do that special and, you know, and we would spend time together like that. Mm-hmm. And so I just think just remembering his attention, you know, I think always spoke volumes to me, just how, you know, during that, he knew that was a hard time. Mm-hmm. It was a hard time for him, mm-hmm. you know. And so, but he didn't, you know, he still was intentional. Could he have been more intentional? I'm sure he could have. I really haven't really thought about it much. But man, that was hard on him, you know? And, I think anything, it was just sort of chaos for everybody. I think that's what divorce kind of does. Mm-hmm. It's just chaotic. It kind of rips the fabric of your life apart mm-hmm. a little bit. And so, you know, that was hard on him, it was hard on us. And so, but in the midst of it, you know, there was just there were some tender moments in there. And then there were some ugly moments where I was, you know, I picked a fight with my dad, like mm-hmm. a fist fight with my dad. Like if I was in ancient times, I would have been stoned to death mm-hmm. for doing it, you know. The just teenage angst, you name it, but even the coming back together from that was memorable, was sweet, you know, and it was just hard, you know. And so I guess what I took from, you know, I guess to sum up what I took from my dad growing up is that, man, he's not perfect. He loves me. He's someone I can go to. I can rely on him. He's generous. If I need money, if I need anything, he's not going to offer it. But, you know, if we're in a disaster, he's a safety net. Like what a lot of people don't have, mm-hmm. you know. And so he was a safety net for me and my siblings. And but now, I mean, like, it's like now we're best friends. Just want to hang out, mm-hmm. you know. And so it's kind of we went through some rocky times and we just sort of make it through, you know. That's, yeah.
I know every situation is different, but if there was any person who was, I guess I think about from the perspective of someone who experienced a divorce as a child and then grew up and is still married to their wife.
Yeah.
If there's any person who is considering divorce, how would you, like, what would you tell them from your own experience of experiencing that and then choosing not to experience that as an adult?
Man, that's hard because I know sometimes there are some, first of all, just my heart of compassion going through what you're going through. If you're considering divorce, I know it's not easy.
Mm.
And there may be situations where it's legitimately harmful for you to remain mm-hmm. in that marriage. Or at least you are terrified of that. And somewhere you actually may be. So I would say destructive marriage versus like a disappointing marriage, which I think if I'm talking to that person, destructive marriage person, I would say, let's talk, you know, But the person who's dissatisfied with their marriage and wants out, I would say, you know, this goes far beyond kind of this choice that you're making right now. For you, the sense of shame that you're going to carry with you, the sense of, I guess, the what it would do to your family, what it would do to your relationship with your kids, what it does to your kids' lives. And it's, listen, God works all things together. And I really, I think within our kind of our little Christian subculture, basically Christianity in general, like divorce is the unforgivable sin. It's not. There's life after divorce. God hates divorce because he hates what happens when two people who come together and who are knit together and who have covenanted with each other, when they break that covenant, what it does to them, it breaks his heart. God hates things that are harmful to us. God doesn't hate divorce because he hates people who get divorced. There's this design in marriage for the man and the woman to reflect the unity that is within God himself, Father, Son, Holy Spirit, the love that Christ has for his church. And so divorce is really hard on people, and because it's hard on people, God hates it. I also think
you would say that it was hard on you.
It was, that's what I'm saying. It was, yeah, I need to get out of the clouds here. It was very hard on me, but I, at this time, you don't kind of don't realize it.
You don't identify that as the cause of the difficulty.
Yeah, it's just your life.
Right.
You know, I mean, I remember when my dad told me, first time I'd ever seen him cry. And, seeing them, and so there was this sort of initial kind of shock, but at age nine, or at what was I, nine? Was it nine? I was 14, ninth grade. So that's a freshman. Was that 14? 14, 15 years old, something like that.
Beginning of high school.
Yeah, it's beginning of high school. I was just kind of numb to it. Like, I don't know that I had a I was sort of a sociopath. I don't know that I really was
like
really
it didn't quite register. It. Yeah, like this is a big event.
Yeah, well, I knew it was a big event, but it was like, I guess we'll just. What are we doing? You know, when's my next baseball game? You know, I was like, it disrupted me in ways that I didn't even realize. You know, and so that but what it, I would say overall, the chaos that it brings about just in the lack of support structures, and I don't just mean like financial support, and I don't even mean just love, like my mom and my dad, on both sides, were both very affectionate and always cared for us, but just the stability of it. And that what became normative for us was chaos. What became normative for us, and this is not all kids, was manipulation, you know, basically living without parental authority, getting to go to whatever house that I wanted to. You know, and again, there's no book on here's the best thing to do whenever you get divorced and your family is, you know, the fabric of your family is being torn apart. It was, so there was no, you know, here's what you should do. Here's the structure that you should have for, you know, I think the law provides provisions or provides, you know,
some custody and guidelines and
stuff like that. But, and you know, I'm sure there's plenty of people who know, and there's professions or counselors who can kind of help talk about this, but you know, that's in the weeds. You know, what are you going to do with the kids, and what are you going to do with this and that? So it was just kind of.
Well, I imagine even how are you going to feel about it? You know, the feeling betrayed by somebody or rejected or like that book doesn't really solve that.
It doesn't, man. Yeah. It's just a lot of
book doesn't solve the heart.
It doesn't. And I, and I, you know, I just have seen people who I care deeply about, my parents, beginning with them, but it was just, they come to this place where, I mean, it was the final kind of tear of a cloth that has been tearing for a long, long time, you mm-hmm. know? And I think that was the case with my parents. They were high school sweethearts and, you know, they just tried to figure it out. Mm-hmm. The things that they struggled with, the challenges that they had, ended up being, there was not this common ground between the two of them of like, I'm going to love you like Christ loved the church. Mm-hmm. And I think they weren't walking with Jesus at the time. And so I think has a lot to do with it. Just sort of helps you sort of keep those cuts from turning into scar tissues, mm-hmm. you know, and allows for quicker healing and overlooking one another's faults, that kind of a thing. But, you know, I think there's probably also just, you know, the things that they dealt with were probably really big that, mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of Christians wouldn't make it through, mm-hmm. you know, so, yeah.
Yeah. Well, thanks. That's good. So, what are some things that you do in your family today that you find that you either have continued to do from your dad to you, to your own kids, or alternatively, have you found to be particularly impactful to your kids and to your family broadly?
We're basically empty nesters. This is, by the way, a diet drink. This is not rum or whatever.
Rum and diet cola.
But it's in a rum cup. Is that what they're called? Is that the official word for it? Yeah. So it's hard for me to think of what I've done well because I tend to think of only the things that I've done wrong, which is, I would say, first of all, as a dad, don't fall into that trap because
only thinking about the bad things.
Of just living in shame, of living in this sense of failure. It's like, you're going to fail, get over it, you know? So that's a huge piece of advice that I think I've did not understand how it was sort of a part of my programming, is that my tendency to get a lot of mileage out of failures, and to keep rehearsing them and to see all of my kids' actions in light of what I've done. But that's for the second half of that question. But I would say the first, you know, what we did is we were there, you know, and we spent a lot of time with our kids. We brought them along with us. As a pastor, they were there. I just got to see up front and center what my life was like, I think they had a very healthy experience of the church. I don't think they had a healthy experience of dad at home because of his unhealthiness as a pastor, but or because how unhealthy he was when he was a pastor, just emotionally. Mm-hmm. But they got to see a lot. And so I think just bringing them with you, letting them be a part of your life as much as possible. But yeah, so I think, you know, playing around the weird church building that mm-hmm. your church used to meet in and the office building, you know, that kind of stuff. I think going on vacations, I mean, I think we just experiences, I think, were a big thing. And sort of me and Heather had always said, you know, we what we're going to do is, instead of giving our kids things, and we gave them things, but that sounds terrible, but we gave them gifts, but really we want to, the greatest gift is to do stuff with them and create memories. And
what's your favorite memory?
We went to Rome together on a family trip. We went to, well, first we went to, yeah, we went to Rome, then we went to Beirut, and then we went to Dubai, and then we came home. It was a trip that we had no business taking financially. It was like 6 years ago. Mm-hmm. We stopped paying for it probably 2 years ago. But it was, you know, and so I don't know. Dave Ramsey would disagree with that choice for sure. Dave Ramsey would disagree with a lot of stuff that we've done. But
it was worth
it. That's
because he's right. But it was worth it in the bank of family memories.
It was worth it in the bank. Yeah, it's good. Yeah. You know, we still tell stories about that. Kids, mm-hmm. We had all the kids home this last Christmas. First time in a year that we've all been together. And everybody's, you know, still telling stories about, you know, remember what Max was, you know, giving Sophia a flat tire the whole time down that canal in Rome. And she turned around and got so mad at him, and we all laughed. And, you know, just little stories here and there. It's just, it's sort of a richness. And, you know, taking my two oldest kids, I haven't gotten to do this, unfortunately, with my youngest. I will, or I plan to, with at least my youngest, but the two youngest haven't. Taking them on mission trips, you know, and just letting them see other cultures. I think that was something that we were very committed to do. Mm-hmm. Just let them be a part of seeing the world. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, learning, giving the perspective about what it means to be American, about their privilege, about all those kinds of things, helping them understand that, you know, we have a lot, mm-hmm. you know.
So that was just a high value on spending time together and experiences.
Yeah.
And two ways that you have chosen to do that is one in vacations. I'm sure there's others that you've chosen to do that with. And then the other was mission trips, but that was sort of combined with the idea of exposure to things besides our own family.
Right.
Is that right?
Yeah. And besides their own culture.
Yeah, besides their own culture, yeah.
And then, you know, spending a lot of time just, you know, around the house, watching movies, being spontaneous, and going at 9:30 to Brahms and getting ice cream, and, you know, taking trips to, you know, just kind of do events like that throughout the week. I think we're a big part of all of their growing up. And maybe that's just me wanting to get Brahms at 9, but it's just, but I didn't do it alone. I don't know that we did say, you know, we just want to spend time with them. And, mm-hmm. and I think that was a strategy. Mm-hmm. So quality time, honestly, probably the biggest was just our marriage, me and Heather's marriage. Mm-hmm. And we're
the biggest thing that you focused on and felt was important in your family.
The biggest thing that I've done well for our kids that I'm still doing today mm-hmm. is loving my wife and mm-hmm. not always well. And I don't know that I was always a great model for just a great husband, but I think just them seeing the tenderness that we have for each other, the affection, the love that we have for each other, that we're still rocking 25 years later, you know, and crazy about each other, you know. And I think just them, that provides a sense of stability. I think it provides a contrast to, I think, a lot of the world that they experience, and a lot of their friends don't have that, you know. So I think it sort of stands out to them, at least as an example. Having them in church, I think just raising them around the Bible, around a gospel framework, I think obviously critical piece to that, where they're hearing the word, where they're seeing other Christians operate, you know. They did not have, I think a lot of people grow up with an experience where they see a lot of fake Christians. Mm-hmm. But I think we were blessed with just a small community church that, where the corners aren't, like, it's hard to be a casual churchgoer at a church of our size, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I think our kids got to see all the glory of that and the strangeness of it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, to meet some interesting folks. And, you know, it's funny, Henry went to, He went to a church on Post at West Point. And I was like, so how was it? And it was a smaller church. And he was like, it was a great, awkward, small church, just like I'm used to, just like I love. You know, where, you know, you don't have professional musicians up there all the time, and the slides are always
kind of off a little bit. Yeah.
You know, and it's, they play an awkward, like this one, the time he went, they didn't even have a band. I think it was like, they played something
on a CD or something.
On a CD. And then he was like, and he just said it was the most awkward thing in the world. But he's like, and that's my church. That's my church life, you know? And so there's this, I think that's helped with this sort of a lack of superficiality. I think another thing, and this is sort of iffy.
So, and you got time together, you got your marriage,
yeah,
and you have going to church,
yeah,
and you have sort of seeing like real Christians sort of struggle it out in their faith,
yeah,
not having maybe a false picture of what Christianity is, what's portrayed oftentimes in pop culture as being their definition of Christianity.
Yeah, like they were there because of Jesus, or at least they were super interested in Jesus.
Mm-hmm. So fourth reason was, you're about to mention it.
Oh yeah, so thank you for keeping me on track. we had a homeless man live with us, and and they grew up seeing, you know, like Max's first word was his name. And I think that, again, that's back to the last point of just, you know, we tried to live it out, and we really wanted to serve him, whether we did that with really open eyes and really understanding what we were doing. And I don't think we were trying to like be cool or sort of, I think we were really trying to live out the gospel.
Yeah.
And our kids saw us really earnestly trying to live out the gospel.
Mm-hmm.
Now, whether or not you should do that, you know, for the safety of your family, whether that's actually good for your family. I mean, we took a lot of measures. It wasn't just haphazard.
Well, just but, come on, live in my bedroom. Yeah.
But it was, you know, they got to, it's just a part of their growing up, you know? And so I think when they see, the kingdom of God, you know, and the things that God really cares about, I mean, those are things that they're calibrated to see. Mm. They're things that they care about.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I think that was, we did all right with that.
Yeah. That's great. That's awesome. I love those. Those are fantastic. So give me two things. If you could go back and tell yourself to avoid or do differently, what would those two things be? You have enough time behind you now that you can go back. Yeah. You know, so some people who might watch this, or myself, we're still on the first half.
The first half, yeah.
So my oldest is 14, right?
this is sort of two sides of the same coin, I think. One is, if I could be the kind of person that established healthy rhythms for my kids to be exposed to not just the gospel, but to the Bible, and to just the wisdom of the scriptures. I'm talking about like the Proverbs and just the world of the Bible and what God has to say. And I think if I was, instead of, again, sort of, is it uploading? Yeah. Trying to upload truth to them in, you know, spurts and conversations, which would come across as preaching.
Mm-hmm.
So the other side of that coin is, I think a lot of the reason that it did do that with my kids was that I didn't trust God with them to just simply. So I feel like I'm not that way now because I've learned from it, but it was just, there was this urgency, this earnestness that only belongs kind of on Sunday morning, you know, when you're preaching, that I think a lot of that was, especially with my oldest daughter, was would come across as very combative or very like, I need to convince you. And then it would be when she's not ready to be convinced or not ready to talk or has her own ideas, God forbid, you know. I think that led to frustration. And I think that frustration was in a lot of ways like, you know, this cycle of, you know, she's not believing because of something I've done wrong, or she's not, or whatever. And so I would just kind of I'd put less pressure, especially again on the older one, because I think that's where it's been the hardest. And you always think, I would have never said that I was that, you know, the footloose dad, you know, who's super hardcore on his kids. And, but I think in a lot of ways I was, and so instead of let's just let the word of God do its work in a systematic way, not make every conversation so high stakes. Let's just emotionally high stakes. So just like, are you going to turn away from that idol or what? You know, it's like, dude, come on. I'm trying to watch TV or whatever. It's like, it's so, it just became. And so I think what was a good, good intentions on my part for her to know God. I think I tried to force that a little too much. And so maybe the whatever the applicable lesson is build rhythms into your family. And I know you guys are strong at that. Heather and I are not. And have them in church, all that stuff's great, but like let the word of God just sort of saturate their lives in different ways.
So would you say that, because I feel like I've experienced a little bit of this, Jubilee's 14, so she's like getting into that age range where she certainly is, she has her own thoughts. And I think I've realized in other scenarios, such as in a work scenario, or if you're the supervisor somewhere, if someone is a supervisor at a job, your words automatically have additional weight that you don't see right off the bat unless you're really aware of that. And I feel like I've noticed that even now, and it bothers me that, because sometimes I just want to have a conversation and I feel in my head, I feel like I'm just having a conversation.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's actually being received as a conversation because I'm not just another person.
That's right.
I am the dad.
That's called power dynamics.
Yeah, right. Yes. I mean,
it's really...
It is.
It, you know, Sophia said to me one time, and this drove me nuts. She's just like, but now I understand. Mm-hmm. But at the time, I was like, what? She's like, I need a dad. I don't need a pastor. And I'm like, you can't separate those two. You know what I mean? And it's like, I don't separate my Christian life. I did. You know, I was a total hypocrite in many ways at times. Mm-hmm. And... But, you know, I wanted to have this sort of,
you wanted still, to be single-minded.
Single-minded, like, Christ over
I'm always a Christian.
He's always all, yeah. So it's like, and the pastor is not some special thing over a regular Christian, you know, his non-pastor or whatever. And it's like, that's true, but it's also not. You know, there's a power dynamic. There's a weight to it. So, and then so when that's your dad also... I think that sort of created this foggy lens through which everything I said kind of went to, I was trying to twist her arm. And when it actually happened that I was actually trying to twist her arm, that didn't help. You know what I mean? Because I was out of fear, you know, and I don't even, I've thought about this. I don't know if this is true. It may have been in there somewhere, but like, I wanted to be the pastor whose kids were following Jesus. But I never would have said that out loud. But you know, as I thought of a successful pastor of someone who's doing their job and he's able to lead his family to love the Lord. And well, gosh, my family's not loving the Lord. What's wrong with me? Am I not a successful pastor? And going successful again, that word success in the eyes of Scripture. And again, I don't think the Bible actually teaches that you know, mm-hmm. your kids need to be well behaved, mm-hmm. but, and so, but I,
but even the idea that you had that as a, like, success had that in its,
that in it, yeah.
in its mix somewhere.
Yeah. What's made caring about my daughter, what's made my daughter's growth more about me than about her. It made it about my identity. It made it about my working out my daddy issues. You know, my she like sacrificing her on the altar of my version of success. I think, and that's a very strong way of putting it. But it's not far. And I think parents do that to their kids. It's just real easy.
Well, I can see, even like you said, you've got, I'm more to your dad, but you're also at the church, so I'm also your pastor. It's like, those are two big roles,
right?
Like you said, layered on top of each other.
Yeah.
And for many dads, they don't have that opportunity to be in that double position, unless, you know, their kid was their employee too, possibly, you know, you're my employee and you're my kid.
Right.
Now I'm really telling you what to do. You know, no, boy, you shouldn't do your job like that. Yeah, you know,
that can get weird, you know, and again, of course, you know, if you grew up and I was a farmer and my daughter was a farmer with me, and assuming that we grew up in a time when women were actually also farming,
right? But, yes, when they were on the fields,
we're all working together to bring the house, or to take care of the house, kind of the way it used to be. She's got her role of milking cows, I'm out there sweating, doing the harder kind of the physical labor. If that was the case, you know, I think that would, but there's this sort of separation of you know. But another thing.
So that one,
I didn't finish that thought.
No, that's good. Yeah. That one was like, you're getting wrapped up in your children's sort of success, or your children following the Lord, that being wrapped up in your own identity. Plus it was the idea of bringing down the big moments by speaking truth over the course of time regularly. The
expectation of big moments. Yeah. And not even just speaking truth. I think, obviously faith comes by hearing. So the Word of God should always be, but I just think, you know, like, let's enjoy creation together. Like, creation speaks, you know what I mean? So not everything, even, so maybe even taking the burden off of you as a dad to be the one who's going to make sure that your kid gets everything from God. That everything that they're supposed to be, everything they're supposed to get. Because God created the heavens, and the heavens are declaring the glory of God. And so let's look at some science together, you know, let's help them see these things. And but also let's just enjoy life together. I think there's like more moments where there's no pressure, pressure-free moments, you know?
That's good. I can see. So for us, I think there's a lot of, my wife is a very diligent person. And so lots of things in our house become like a means to complete something, complete a project, complete a task, so that we can then go do this other thing.
Right.
And even that in of itself, it becomes, I at least find it difficult to just enjoy that.
Yeah.
Because you're constantly trying to finish something.
Right.
And there's never an end to that. It's just never ending task completion.
But see, that's character forming, though. It's easy to miss the point.
Yeah. Or if you're just enjoying each other together. Even.
The glory of all these things that we're doing. Right. And we don't always have to, I think there's this sense of like, we're afraid that you're not going to get this. So we need to make sure that we talk about whatever the cool thing that's happening is. Like, we over explain things instead of like just in the memory itself. You know, you're creating these positive experiences. And again, there's not that there's not time or times when you should explain things. But I think there's just a beauty and a glory to reality because God made it and God is beautiful and glorious. That where, you know, we're always afraid that someone's going to miss it, and we sort of always distill it down into moments or into like sort of definable moments. Let me just teach you right here. And again, there's time for that. Plenty of time for that. But it's like, just shut up sometimes and just, enjoy life together. Don't make everything about heaven and hell. Don't make everything about your kid's salvation. God's making it about that's him. That's his business. Mm-hmm. Again, you got to balance that with, you want to lead your kid to the Lord. Mm-hmm. It's like, mm-hmm. But I think there's just this sense of, we're in a hurry. We're anxious about life. We're anxious about like the Christian, the human experience and learning how to follow Jesus and struggling in our flesh. And it's like, I want you to struggle with this the same way that I do. And I want you, so we imprint or we pass that anxiety onto them, and it's sort of encapsulated in all this teaching and moments. And again, but if you're deliberate about it, you know, what you're doing is you're not making everything so high stakes. Mm. That's a little foggy, but I think there's just this real sense of like, that I used to have, you know. Let me correct you on that. You know, if you say something, if you, like, you know, my daughter would say things that were not doctrinally sound.
Sure.
Because she's 13, you know, yeah. And she doesn't know systematic theology, and she's just feeling things out, and she's learning, and there's a lot of kind of truth to what she's saying. Mm. But it's, you know, not how the Bible teaches and ultimately not true from our biblical perspective. Yeah. But like, let's not crush that curiosity by saying, well, actually, you know, that's idolatry when you say it that way. And which I don't know that I ever used those words, but it was, again, it was very high stakes. Mm. So just, let them wrestle. Teach them to wrestle with truth. Mm. Is it download or upload? I'm really struggling with that.
I think it must be upload, because upload is you sending something.
That's right. You don't just upload a bunch of truth to them.
Force upload.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Open up the whatever it's called. And don't just upload a bunch of truth. Don't just dump it on them. But let them wrestle. Like, so give them tools to wrestle with truth. Mm. Don't just give them truth. Mm. Give them tools to think critically. Give them tools to... And again, I don't know that our education systems really equip us to do that. Doesn't equip them to do that. Mm. You know, I think if you're doing homeschool, you're in a better position to really kind of teach them how to think, not necessarily what to think. Mm. Trusting that if you teach them how to think, they're going to end up, you know, thinking at least something that is close to the truth, and then as, you know, God reveals himself through his word, it becomes more specific. But I think for my daughter, because of that, truth or the Bible, it was always something that she was being corrected with. Mm-hmm. And I just thought I was being a good dad. Mm-hmm.
You thought you were pointing her to the truth.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, but that's not how I, like, that's how you do it on Sunday morning, again, in a sermon. Mm. But that's not how I would do it in a counseling appointment, you know? With people that are not my kids, but when it's your kid, it's like, nope, you know, you've got to, you don't say that, but there's just a lot more, at least for me, it was... a lot more pressure that I put on myself
to fix an apparent problem,
which wasn't one.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah,
the
yeah.
problem is the one that if only God knows what it is, because only God knows the heart. Mm. And I never even would have said at the time, you believe these things and you believe these things. Like, that's not how I thought. Like, you got to check these boxes, but it was still, even my insistence on God's grace and all these different things, you know, it didn't come across as the gentleness of Jesus. It didn't come across as good news to her, because I think of the way those conversations went a lot.
So if you were to implement a rhythm, do you have an idea of what specifically that might have looked like if you had implemented one?
Man, so yeah, I'll give you a good example. So like just family devotions, terrible at that. A lot of times, because we just didn't know, we were terrible at just being, terrible is just such a strong word. You're hearing a lot of that self.
It was challenging for you guys.
It was challenging. it was very challenging for us. And
you're saying because of like personal personalities and
doing anything on a consistent level. Mm-hmm. Dinner would come around, everybody's too tired, whatever. And it's like, from a young age, I think just make it a part of your, what I would have done if I could do it differently, make it a part of your family rhythm to sit down on a regular basis together and just open the Bible. And don't make too much. Don't be like, oh, they hate God, you know, or I'm failing at this or whatever. And so I think just exposure to the word.
Mm.
That's it.
Even like without sermonizing or anything.
Without sermonizing.
Yeah.
You know, open, let them ask questions, you know, and just exposure to the word. And let them learn to just hear the God's voice, hear the timbre of his voice through the scriptures. And, you know, and that, I think, so you're building this baseline of kindling, you know, for them, for the fire of the Spirit to eventually take hold of. And you're also just, it can do more, the Word of God can do more heavy lifting than you can. You know what I mean? And it just, so I think just in a simple, whatever, however many times a week or however often, whatever's realistic for you and your family. But just do something on a regular basis where you're opening the Word. There's going to be screaming, or there's going to be, I don't want to, and you just do it. And if they don't want to do it, you say, oh, it's okay. And you just get along with it good natured, and you don't get like
all huffy about it.
And,
yeah.
And that's what I did. You know, what are we doing wrong? You know, it's like, what's wrong with us? It's like, are you kidding me? Like, I never would have. So like, if a parent would have said that to me when I was pastoring about, you know, their kid, they had tried this with their kids and their kid acted up or wasn't interested and they got all down on themselves, I'd be like, dude, I would be like, you got to go easy on it, man. But then when it came to me, you know what I mean? So,
you had the heavy hand for yourself.
Oh, the heavy hand for myself. And Jesus is like, dude, you need to repent of that. Because that's a heavy hand that he took, you know. And God can be heavier on me than I could ever be on myself. And Jesus took the justice and the weight of God. And it's just, you know, that's very heavy. And so, but I like to be a martyr. You know, woe is me. It's called narcissism, I believe. And one more thing.
Okay, go ahead.
That I would do differently.
So this is, you got the rhythms.
Yeah, the rhythms.
Okay, the rhythms. And then the second thing.
Is never let them have one of these.
Never. Phone, technology.
Smartphone. Just be very wise. Okay, can you edit out never? Be more wise and intentional with their technology intake. Because as I was muffing the Christian message to my daughter, she was getting other messages. And really completely, her curiosity led her into all kinds of different directions. When I was growing up, I wasn't a believer growing up, but it was like, you're either a Christian, one of those people, you know, one of those Christian people, or you're just kind of a dude, you know, like there were two options, but now there's just so many things you can be, and your curiosity will take you anywhere. Your imagination, there's a lot more open doors for the human imagination now. And so to come and feast on anything. And a lot of these, I mean, they're not all none of them are unique or new, but they're just available. Mm. You know, they've been around for a long time. Mm-hmm. All I have to say is, I think part of a Gen X parenting thing is, you know, these were all new to us. We're like, whoa, dude, you can.
Well, a lot of us didn't have those until we were a little bit older.
Yeah.
So we're maybe 20 or 18 to 25.
Didn't understand the impact. I mean, looking back on it now, you're like, open access to literally anything you want.
Yeah.
You don't think there's going to be negative consequences to that? Mm. It's kind of dumb. Should have thought of that. Mm. But I think a lot of Gen X parents are sort of kicking themselves a little bit of like, boy, and you're seeing schools taking cell phones away now, and, you know, like having no cell phone policies. Because I think
they've said it's impossible.
They are learning the hard lesson there. And it's honestly, I'm here to tell you, it has been hard on my kids. Mm-hmm. And they may not recognize that because it's just life.
It's all they know. Yeah.
But I think it, you know, in terms of all the things you hear and read, you know, it's all true. You know, the anxiety that it brings about, you know, the slothful waste of time, you know, it's like
loss of direction, especially for like young men.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cause I mean, or the adoption of a very unhealthy direction. Mm. Like, you know, we live in a world where it's, you don't know what it means to be a man because society is telling us that it's not okay, or that was a big theme for a long time, is any idea or any sort of anything that smacks of like traditional masculinity is toxic. Mm. And I think dudes just didn't know how to be dudes, and they haven't known. So you get real true misogynists like Andrew Tate come along, and he gets this huge captive audience of young dudes. He's like, finally, this is someone who's going to give us permission to be a man, even though it's a distorted version of manhood. But he's a loud voice, and it's finally someone's, like, there's something that he's touching on, and a lot of those guys are touching on something very real.
Mm-hmm. So we talked about rhythms, trying to do consistent rhythms, bring down the pressure of those, like, sermonizing moments. Not that those are impossible to do or they shouldn't be done, but just that making a regular routine of speaking what's true, of reading the Bible on a regular basis without feeling the pressure to sermonize. And then we were talking about your second one, which was smartphones.
Yeah.
And if you're the kind of family that has difficulty consistently watching something or keeping up with something, that you would feel comfortable saying,
don't do it at all.
Don't get a cell phone at all for your kids.
Yeah. And your kids would be upset about that, and they can learn to deal with it. Mm. And
what age would you say they could get a cell phone?
It depends on the kid. Mm-hmm.
18, 20, 22?
I mean, it's honestly, and you got to take everything I say with a grain of salt here, because this is really led to some bad experiences in our family, and so I'm probably way on the side of never, and let them buy their own first cell phone
if they care about it that much.
If they care about it when they're out of the house. I want my kid to learn how to think before there's billions of other voices telling them how to think. And I don't think we, again, back to what I was talking about earlier, we told them what to believe. We didn't give them the tools, or I think, really speaking of one of them, because the other ones, I think, because of the mistakes I made with her,
you learned something along the way.
Shifted, but I think, teaching them how to wrestle, how to ask the right questions, those kinds of things. Instead of just telling them what to believe. Yeah. And so, I forgot. That was a hanging chad of a thought, but I don't remember where I was going with that.
That was the, you were on the cell phones, no cell phones, then that allowing them to have access to a million voices of different ideas before they're ready to navigate and understand what's true, what's not true, what's false. I mean, it's a challenging world because, I mean, gosh, now with AI, I mean, you watch something and it's like, I mean, I guess that's true. How do you even know? It's almost impossible for the mind to distinguish between what's true and what's false.
Well, and I think I just want to be real clear too. I think as a parent, you have the right to want your kid to believe or to raise your kid to believe what you believe.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to live in that tension that you don't control what they believe. You don't control your kid.
You don't control their mind.
Right.
Yes.
You can't.
They're not yours. They're not you.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, but I'll also say this. So I believe that's true.
Mm-hmm.
But I think what I'm saying doesn't apply just to Christian parents. That I think everybody, whatever they're, I think there's a set of principles, you know, of teaching your kid of a humility, of that ability to be curious and to ask questions and to ask the right questions. I don't think that's a distinctly Christian thing. I think it's, and so I would say that to any parent, you know, because every parent has this tendency to sort of, even this idea of this real hands-off idea. I think they lead their kids exposed to not knowing how to ask questions.
Mm-hmm.
So even if you don't preach at your kids to or whatever, you're still exposing them, you know, to, everybody would agree, whether you are a Wiccan or a Baptist, that millions of pieces of information coming in and bombarding your kid's head are not good. It's not a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
That there are trusted voices. Now, your trusted voices may be different than mine, but you don't want them exposed to voices that will take them down a path, a negative path. Mm. And so, yeah, I think this isn't just a... So I'm not just saying this because one of my kids doesn't believe what I believe. I guess that's what I'm getting at.
Mm-hmm.
If you want your kid to be healthy, then I would say you need to think very strongly about smartphones.
Mm.
And ultimately very strongly about their access to, and whatever that...
Broad information without any restrictions.
Without any restrictions.
Yeah. Without any boundaries, guidelines.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I can understand that. It's awesome. Hey, this has been a fantastic conversation.
Yeah, I've really enjoyed it.
Yeah, thank you for coming.
Fellow fathers and friends, so glad you could join us for this episode. To stay connected, visit our website at fatherandfriend.com. Sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and other social media sites. Be sure to like, follow, and share with fellow dads and families in your community. If you have a topic you'd like us to discuss, send us a message and let us know. Until our next episode, keep showing up, loving deeply, and making an impact for the good of your family. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time on Father and Friend.